This podcast is proudly sponsored by David Robago Family Chiropractic. We fondly refer to our chiropractor as Dr. Dave, who is an ambassador of good competition and an active member of our jiu-jitsu community for the past 10 years. For sports injuries, think Robago Chiropractic, where soft tissue injuries respond quickly with chiropractic care so you can keep on training. Dr. Robago is conveniently located near Arden Mall at 1860 Howe Avenue, number 435. Give him a call at 916-568-6333 so you can give it your all on the mat. And don't forget to tell him Gibran sent you.
Live.
Hey.
So you were just talking to me about feeling, like feeling jiu-jitsu, feeling grappling, when you can't see it, right? When I was grappling with you, I noticed that you were like really just in, you were just like really like just keeping up with my movements, mm-hmm. In a way that I frankly, I didn't expect you to be able to,
yeah,
you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to lie. I'm a brown belt now. And so what I've been doing is I'll be taking like white belts and blue belts, like kind of lower belts, and kind of closing my eyes sometimes when I grapple with them. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know it, you can really feel a lot.
Definitely. And it's so interesting to me how tied the world is visually. Like, you know, we were mentioning earlier about how there are some people who think that blindness is literally the worst disability that you can have. And maybe I'm jaded, but I think pretty easy. I can't see things. So yeah, occasionally I'm going to run into a wall or do some blind stuff, but but there's definitely advantages of it. You know, like I said, you know, knowing people's visual tells, and when we're tangled up, I can feel every move of your body as you can as of mine. So you can, you know, I can tell if you're going to put a lot of strength this way, maybe you're off balance this way, or you're leaving yourself open for this choke or this arm bar. So I think it's just really knowing your body, knowing your opponent's body, and figuring out the best way to utilize your opponent's momentum against them, and, you know, strength against them in some ways. And I get a lot of people who, I don't want to say they underestimate me, but I'm maybe the first blind person that they meet. So
I'm going to be totally honest. When you and I were on the mat, I underestimated you.
Yeah, like, I know. You know,
just when I saw, I'm a little bit bigger than you. Mm-hmm. You're a woman, yep. So I assumed I would have a strength advantage. You are really fucking strong, and I just thought you would have to kind of catch up to my movements, and mm-hmm. you're actually just right there. It was really impressive.
Thank you.
That's what I was saying. Like what I was saying earlier. Like you're not good for a woman. You're not good for a blind woman. You're just really fucking good. It's kind of amazing, actually. You were talking about earlier about how you don't see yourself, you don't see blindness as being the worst disability, but there's some talk among other disabled folks that blindness is like the worst.
Definitely. You know? I've had that happen. So when I went to the Paralympics, it's not just judo, it's every Paralympic sport. So
can
there's
I ask
every
you something there? Uh-huh. Do you compete against only other blind folks, or do you compete against only folks with the same disability, or how does that work?
So each sport is different. I can speak the most to judo because clearly it's the coolest sport that, you know, is at the Paralympics. I'm not biased, but so they have it is against blind people. You can also have blind deaf athletes. So I don't think we've ever rolled with my gi, but when I have my gi uniform on, it has a red patch on the sleeve, on both sleeves. So that indicates that I am totally blind. So that gives me a little bit of just different rule allowances. But there are different, I think we were also talking about earlier, the different levels of blindness. So they have three categories. I'm considered a B1, pretty much I'm totally blind with a little bit of light perception. It's just enough vision to get me in trouble when I want to be dumb and try to use it. There's a B2.
I don't trust it.
Yeah, I don't. It's then there's a B2, and I apologize. I don't know the exact, they can see, you know, light and colors, and, you know, maybe be able to, if they hold their phone up close to them, you know, maybe zoom in on things they can read print.
Almost like a newborn baby where the whole world is kind of like a blur or something.
Yeah,
like
and, that. And some of them might be able to see pretty well. Lighting might play into there's a. Then they go to B3, that someone, the highest they can have is 2200 vision.
Okay.
So they can see pretty well. Coincidentally, in Rio, on the women's side, I am the only totally blind female athlete who medaled.
There you go.
So that was...
Hey.
That was pretty cool.
For the United States?
In the whole Paralympic judo.
Paralympics.
Wow. For judo.
Got it.
Yeah. So, and on the men's side, I think there were a couple more... But for the women's side, I was the only totally blind athlete.
And so you got your bronze medal there.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of cool. See, I'd rather be bronze than silver because you won the last.
I didn't lose the gold medal match.
yeah, but you got to win your last match in the bracket.
Yeah, and it was actually pretty cool too because I fought the Brazilian.
Oh, so you beat her in her hometown.
Yeah. So
you kept her
I
off
mean,
the podium in her
that,
hometown.
I'm so thankful to her for being an awesome athlete. So in Brazil, their Paralympic athletes, especially their judo athletes, are pretty revered, thought of very, very highly. And so it was, I can remember that day being a perfect storm.
Yeah.
I woke up and, you know, people will tell you this or whatever, but I can go from my experience and just tell you, I knew in my heart that I would be on that medal stand.
You just knew it.
I didn't know where I would be, but I knew that I would be there. I fought
like before, like once you touched down, you had that feeling, or you
going to Brazil. I knew that I was going to medal the day that I fought. I absolutely knew that I would be on that medal stand. I didn't know where I was going to be, but I did so much imagery. I had so much support. My coach Ed Liddy, he told me a year before. He said, "You're going to go to Rio. You're going to win a medal, and you're going to shock the world." I would like to say if I ever go to Vegas, I'm totally taking him with me because he just got me to believe that, you know, every time he talked to me, it was, hey, champ, you know, and he believed in me maybe before I believed in myself, but, you know, I had to believe in myself 110%. And going into that bronze medal match, I remember talking to the other athlete who had medaled before and who was also going to fight for a bronze. He also won. but I was like, you know, hey, Dart, like, how did you feel last time before you were going to go into your bronze medal match? And he told me, he was like, how in the hell did I get here? And I was like, well, great, that's exactly how I feel. So, and then I just had my coaches who just, you know, they're like, Chris, you know you're going to win, right? And I was like, yeah, you know, and they're like, no, we're like not just like saying it, like, you're going to win. This is not like a pump you up, you're winning. And it was that absolute belief. Again, Coach Liddy, we all have that one drill in practice that we hate. There's this one, yeah. It's called the line drill. Most horrible drill ever. So he comes up to me and he's like, hey, Chris, if you win this match, I'll do the... And he puts his hand over his mouth. He's like, no, fuck that. I'm not doing the line drill. You're going to win this match. So, and then, you know, I
had... What is the line drill?
The line drill is... You are at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado. That's where they do judo. The dojo's pretty long. So he says, all right, everybody, you know what time it is. Line up those mats. And everyone just, I don't want to say we don't like him, but.
You don't like him at that
We don't
moment.
Like him at that second. Yeah. So you have to do burpees and you run across to your opponent, you do 5 fit-ins and then you throw them and then you run back and you start that again and you're going in a line and a line and a line and around and running and throwing and doing burpees till it feels like everyone's done enough and everybody has to be working hard. It's not just you. Everybody has to. Wherever you are, if you're being thrown, if you're throwing people, whatever it is, you have to work hard.
This is a conditioning drill.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this in the car ride on the way over here, and I kind of want to touch on it a little bit more. The culture of judo, pretty hard nosed. I watch a lot of, I'm not a judo player, but I watch a lot of like Mongolian judo on YouTube and like American judo on YouTube. Man, you guys work hard.
Yes.
You guys work. I mean, you guys are guys and gals. Probably up there with American wrestlers, and just in terms of work output, aren't you? Wouldn't you say?
I'm not sure what the American wrestling workout is, but I know that I'll do a judo workout and then go do, you know, maybe a different type of sport workout. I'm like, really? This is my warm up. Yeah. This is hard for you. Okay. But I love the discipline. I think, you know, as we were mentioning earlier, how just martial arts pushes you to be better in life. I know that I know how to push myself past that person to be considered their equal. And it's nothing to me. I feel like I should be doing that. And I like that carries over into other life, you know, life aspects.
How is the judo practice structured? Like in jiu-jitsu, as you know, we have like a, you know, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes warm up, 30 minutes technique, and then 40 minutes of sparring or something like that, right?
So it really depends. I mean, each club has different aspects. So before Rio, pretty much my life was work, train, sleep, eat.
Repeat.
Yeah. But it really, really depend. Like there was times where I was going up to the Bay Area and working with Coach Cahill, and I would have an individual person working with me, or just people who were, you know, my training partners who just, you know, would take tons and tons of falls for me. So that's pretty awesome. I'm like, you know, they're a part of my medal too. And then there's times where
for folks listening that don't know, taking a fall is when you allow your training partner to throw you so that they can build
again and again. Hard as they can. So,
ouch.
The other trick to that too is that I fought in the heavyweight division in Rio. So I had to gain the weight to make the minimum weight, but it's an open weight division. So I was constantly having to train with people
that were bigger than you.
Yeah.
Like much bigger.
Yes, yes. So which was very helpful because, you know, I was kind of the small one. I was the small one in my division. But I didn't feel like the underdog in any way. You know, I really had developed that mental toughness and just, you know, knew what the weight felt like. So I wasn't going in. I went in with my eyes wide open, haha. but, you know, training partners are a big part of it. So each practice could be different. I would have those practices. You know, I would go to Ultimate Fitness, but that was probably like my second workout of the day. Maybe I did strength and conditioning, you know, where I'm doing sled pulls and pushes and kettlebells and all these horrible things that my strength and conditioning coach would make me do. I would have those all-out practices where it was, you know, that, you know, that warm up, which involves learning to fall. I think that's one of the biggest lessons, and it's honestly saved me, you know. In judo, we learn how to fall in a specific way to where it's safe. You don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. Can we talk about that a little bit,
actually? Definitely.
Because I think that, grappling is for everybody. First of all, you know what? Maybe it's not for everybody. There's some people out there that I see on the mat where I'm just like, you know, maybe this isn't, you know, and it's really more about their temperament than anything, where it's like, you know, you're taking it real personal when you're getting beaten, you know, and it's like, usually there's an arc with folks where it kind of breaks them down and then builds them up. And then some folks aren't willing to humble themselves.
You have to be humble in judo. You're going to get choked out once a practice or more.
So it's for folks that are willing to humble themselves, judo and wrestling and jiu-jitsu. But learning to break fall, I think, is for everybody, especially for folks as they age. Mm-hmm. It's so important, you know. One, train your feet, train your foot quickness, do your footwork drills, do your foot ladders, train your leg muscles. They actually did the National Institute of Health actually did a study, and it said that as folks age, folks with more leg strength tend to avoid hip problems, and they tend to avoid falling and breaking their hip. It's so important when you start getting to your... I was thinking about this just in the context of my grandma. She has never fallen, knock on wood, but God, wouldn't you want grandma to know how to break fall?
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, seriously, like you want folks to know how to break...
You can be safe.
I learned how to break fall actually skateboarding growing up. You know, you just learn to fall and fall and fall and fall, and I took that to the mat. But that is one of those like random skills, like kind of random party tricks that, man, that'll serve you well over life.
Oh, it saved my neck a couple of times, literally. You know, I was at a friend's house, and they didn't have a railing on their porch, so we were just talking, and I kind of had stepped aside or whatever, and then wasn't paying attention, went to go, you know, step down, and obviously I wasn't stepping on the stairs, and but your body has that muscle memory. And I looked like the coolest kid ever because I landed, and I was like, and I stood up and I was like, well, that was pretty dumb. And you know, if I didn't know how to fall, I literally could have severely injured
really
myself.
Hurt yourself.
So,
yeah.
And it's something like, I think it's really important. I'll do break falls every practice. And as a black belt, it still doesn't matter. You know, all it takes is like posting out and you break your arm and then you're off the mat for a long time. So that's something that I think is very important, no matter what level you're at, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's super important. Also just like little things like just body awareness, you mm-hmm. know, it's incredible how, as you move forward with grappling and you get so deep into the weeds of it, you start to lose sight of quite just how advanced like your level of knowledge is. You know, I'm teaching the Sacramento State MMA club. So Tuesdays we do grappling and Wednesdays we do Muay Thai. And I realized you have to like really explain concepts that civilians just might not have any idea of, where it's like, all right, I need you to like flex your body here, or yeah. I need you to like turn your hips inward or turn your hips outward, or I need you to create a little tension in your arms here so you can finish that choke. And they're just like, how? Like they literally have no
you
concept.
You have to kind of spoon feed them. And it's even different body styles. I'm limbs, you know, I have long arms and legs. So yeah. Sometimes like I have one of my friends and I have to, she has short arms, so I have to teach her T-Rex judo, you know, so then it's good for me because I have to like learn, okay, well, if I don't have this, you know, reach, how do I still make this happen? So, I mean, even just learning different, how to use your body type to the best of your advantage, or how to use, you know, how to really be able to just get the best you can with what you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so you won the bronze.
Yes.
You won the bronze in Rio.
Yes.
But you came up short in London in 2012.
I did.
Yeah. And what was that like? Was that emotional? How do you take losses?
I mean, it sucks, you know, like yeah. literally. And obviously, I think in some ways, you know, we talk about judo, you grow, blah, blah, blah. But in a lot of ways, it's a pretty selfish sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's you get that kind of, and it's not even necessarily a bad ego, but you literally have to believe that you're the shit when you step out on that mat. You know, you really have to believe that you're going to win, that this person can't dominate you, that you will succeed. And I didn't maybe have the mental awareness.
You didn't have that in you quite yet.
I don't think I did. Maybe I didn't.
Not, you know, like totally sharpened.
I wasn't mentally sharpened. I definitely feel like I was trying to train to the best of my ability. Maybe I didn't have the right team with me at the time, and not necessarily the right people, but I just wasn't training the way that I needed to. Didn't have the support that would have helped me. And this time it was so different. So I don't think I would have won.
Like this time you stepped off the plane and you're like, I know I'm getting on that podium. Like
yeah. Just, yeah. I mean, even before yeah. it was just, you know, you have to, again, I had to push so many things away. You know, I lucky that I had so many amazing friends, because hanging out with me before Rio maybe meant coming to my house and feeding me while I fell asleep watching the first 15 minutes of a Netflix movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And people were great with that, or just, you know, giving me rides to and from practice, you know, those are one of those things that were game changers for me. And that meant that's why people hung out with me.
I was talking, go ahead.
Sorry. You know, just in London, I wasn't mentally ready for it. I know that I, you know, thought I was so excited. I was kind of a last person to make it on the team just because, you know, this technicality happened. And I don't want to say
what
that
technicality.
I think there was I don't even remember. I think a girl, like one of them, pulled out or something happened. Like I honestly don't remember.
You were a reserve.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I kind of got that, you know, that yay spot. Yeah. And then in my first match, you know, the worst thing that happens, you hear the and that's your knee.
Wow.
But you know, as a not so smart athlete, I was like, I don't care. I'm here to fight. And I still feel like, you know, even with the injury I had, I felt like I fought my best. I was in the fighting my second match, and I felt like I did the best that I could with the injury. But you know, I don't want to.
You were injured. I mean,
yeah. But I don't. That wasn't my excuse. Like I didn't perform, and it was the lowest feeling because I had so many people who gave up so much for me. You know, who, you know, took the time for strength and conditioning, and yeah, I felt like I let them down, and like, how could I face them? Like, I just was emotionally wrecked. Like, I was upset that I didn't win, because every person who's on the mat wants that. And it didn't happen, and it was so frustrating. It was a low point, but I wanted to remember that feeling. I thought about that day, I want to go to practice.
Got it.
That was what I thought about. Like, do you want to be in this position again? Because it can easily happen.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm a pretty sore loser. I do not like to lose.
Who does?
I don't want to be around people after I lose. I don't want to face my friends and family. I don't want to be comforted. I need like 3 days.
Yeah, I remember being embarrassed.
You're embarrassed.
I came home from London, and my mother had flown out to see me in Sacramento, and I had a whole greeting party, and people were so proud of me.
And because it's remarkable still.
Yeah, but I just wanted to hang my head in shame, and I was so embarrassed. But I had to realize, like, hey, like, they're happy for me, and I need to give them the respect of, like, you know, they still believed in me. But again, you know, I wanted them to. It's way more fun to hug them as a medalist.
Yeah, no, it's this fine line, because you don't. Oftentimes, the people you care about in your family will come together around the competition. Mm-hmm. And so you have an opportunity there to make a moment with your family and your friends and your fans, regardless of the outcome.
Yeah.
But you kind of got to, like, be okay with it if you lose, you know what I mean? And who's okay with losing?
No one's okay with losing. Yeah, exactly.
Losers are okay with losing, exactly. You know? Like, I hate losing.
That's what I was talking about, that perfect storm we were speaking about earlier. You know, when getting ready for that bronze medal match, all of them pumping me up. But, you know, I remember being so excited. And you do all these imagery tricks and mental, you know, preparation. So we're in the chute getting ready, and I'm standing, you know, about 3 feet away from the Brazilian, and they're doing the little thing where they pat you down. And I that gets me like a little, I'm like, can you just massage me? You don't have to hit me. So they're doing all that. And then the crowd just starts going ballistic, like just screaming Brazil. And it was electrifying. Like, it was through my soul, and then started feeling nervous. So I did a trick. I just pretended my name was Brazil and that everybody was cheering for me.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was like, I had to make myself believe that, like, everybody was cheering for me. And I got down early in the match. You know, she got a big throw, but when she got that big throw, I was like, oh, really? Like, okay, you just stop playing around. Like, that's what you know, when you're a kid and you're like, that didn't hurt. I mean, she was very good. You know, from what people say, they felt like she seemed like she was dominating me, but I didn't feel like stressed. I felt still really calm.
Like, you're in this.
Yeah.
So, and then, how'd you win the match? How'd you?
It was pretty dramatic. It was kind of cool. Again, Coach Liddy called it. So it was pretty close to the end of the match, and I am in that safe position on my stomach, and I don't know what she did. I think she just got cocky and felt like she won the match. So she kind of like, took up some of her pressure off me, and then I just jumped on her and pinned her.
Oh, wow. Boom. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you're that's gone. All it was. Like, when they said osaikomi, which means the pin is on, I just remember I was like thinking, you're staying here, girl. Like, she was screaming at me. She was fighting. Like, you know, she made a crucial error. And, like, you know, when she threw me for that first half a point, you know, like, that crowd went crazy, but it was pretty quiet when I had the pin on.
So the way it works is you establish the position, the ref says the pin is on, mm-hmm. and then you got to hold it for 30 seconds?
It's 20 seconds.
20 seconds. Yeah.
But, I mean, you have, you know, someone fighting for their life underneath you. And
no, it's pretty hard to hold a full-grown person.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, like, it's not easy.
No, it's not. So it was incredible. But, you know, you have to be so ready a little bit before the games. I'm training and I'm talking to my coach, and I get a text from my brother, and my mom had a heart attack.
Oh my goodness.
And it was,
that's awful.
It was scary. It was, I mean, like, I'm a big baby, you know, like, you can be as tough as you want on the mat, but when something happens to your parents, like, who cares about anything? So I got to talk to my mom, and she told me that I better get my ass to Rio. And I don't care. I'm not afraid of anybody on the mat. I am totally afraid of my mom. So I did what she said. But it made it so much more important for me. Like, it gave me more focus, you know.
Like, I purpose, kind of.
Yeah. And it was pretty incredible. My mom actually got to watch the match, and on YouTube.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it was nice. But then, you know, after I got off the mat, you know, you get to scream USA, and I bowed to the crowd and waved to them, and the Brazilians were amazing. They still cheered for me. Like, they were so incredible. That was the most humbling thing ever, to hear the Brazilian crowd cheer for me after I beat their athlete.
Let me ask you something. I mean, you can't see them, so you're just hearing this, like, auditorium.
It's a roar.
You're just hearing this roar.
Yeah.
That's got to be so cool.
Yeah, like, it was. Apparently, there was a lot of people that had, like, you know, T-shirts with her face on them, and, you know, oh, like, the goodness. Brazilians, they don't play. Like, they're pretty serious, but
no, they really don't.
So apparently, when I was pinned, I didn't have Coach Lydia in my chair. Like, he asked me, "Where do you want me to be?" But we have our head coach, and he is actually the first judo Paralympic athlete. Before we got a gold in Olympic judo, we had a gold in Paralympic judo. That kind of gets glossed over, but Scott Moore was the first one to actually bring home judo gold.
Very cool.
So, you know, you have that guy as kind of your mentor, and his wife, she is literally tough as nails, and I felt like it was really important to have, like, this lady in my chair. And then I get off the mat. I feel like I was kind of numb. I remember kind of getting off the mat, and then the next thing, Coach Lydia is squeezing the stuffing out of me. You're like, "I told you were going to shock the world." And so I don't argue with him. If he tells me to do something,
Do it.
Yeah. But it was cool. You know, you dream about this so much. You want it so much. You train for it so, so hard. Your life is consumed with it. And then it actually happens. Like, just, you know, the feeling of being, that's what I want. You know, but I had to be in London to be in Rio. I had to feel that failure to feel that success.
Yeah.
To deserve that success.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I read something the other day where it's like that W is tucked behind the loss you're afraid to take, you know? And so you're aiming to go back in 2020.
Yes.
To London.
Actually, it's going to be in Tokyo.
Tokyo. That's right. It was in London previously.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
If you're going to retire in judo, you might as well do it in Tokyo, where judo is.
Where it started.
So it's going to be really fun.
When does your preparation for that start?
Well, it's kind of, I did actually have an injury going into Rio. Had some lower back and lumbar issues and some cervical vertebrae issues. And I just thought it was because I was gaining weight. But it was a little bit more serious than I thought. And just had some issues trying to get, you know, insurance, getting everything taken care of. Sometimes doctors just think they want to kind of, you know, medicate your pain away. And I'm like, I don't
like pills. Instead of actually treating it.
Yeah. So I'm like, no, actually, my body's starting to tell me something. So I had to, you know, take some time off. But I'm actually back on the mat and, you know, doing cardio, starting to work with my strength and conditioning coach.
And now you got to get the weight off.
Yes.
Like, lean back down and get conditioned again.
Definitely. And, you know, and then there's so many parts that go into it. You know, I had that amazing team, and I'm fortunate to have those people still behind me. But, you know, there's more of a target on my back. I am going back to my natural weight. no more heavyweight for me.
What's your natural weight? More like 154 or something like that?
I'm under 154.
Under 154.
So I want to fight under 70 kilos, so I can be between 139 and 154. Which, you know, I can. That's a pretty big area, so my goal is to try to lean down as much as possible
and then be at the top of that weight class.
I like to be a few pounds. I like eating, so I'd rather like be a little bit lighter so that I don't have to not eat before tournaments. I don't want to be. Have to like stuff myself with, you know, burgers and stuff, but I would like to be able to, you know,
to eat while you're getting ready to compete. That makes sense. Yeah, I think that I'm hoping that we're on the verge of a culture change around weight cutting.
Me too.
The culture of it in the men's divisions is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, guys just
kill themselves. Oh
yeah,
it's on both sides. It's on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. I mean I guess I was maybe thinking there's less of it in the UFC on the women's side because there's just less weight categories. So you kind of either have to be in one or the other. Like for the longest time, there was like 125 and 145 or something like that. It was just like, all right, there's a pretty big gap there. But it can't be good to go in and get your head knocked around and be dehydrated, right?
No, it's definitely not. I was fortunate to find, you know, Ronda Rousey was, you know, obviously an amazing judo athlete and then was able to transition into to MMA. And, you know, she had was working with Mike Dolce. And so I started listening to his podcasts and followed his 3 weeks to Shredded program. And that was the best weight cut ever because I felt like I was constantly eating, really? Which is fun. But it was, you know, good, clean food. And I mean, I had to fly the day of my, you know, that I had to weigh in and stepped on the scale. I had eaten like 2 hours before and I was, you know, I was happy I wasn't dehydrated. And I felt like I had such a strong tournament because I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go after this and smash, you know, like Olive Garden and do all this. And, you know, I was just really like, I can go and eat. I can do this, you know, but I don't have to like gorge myself because I haven't been starving for 2 weeks just to barely make this weight and, you know, hold my breath on the scale and do all those dumb, unhealthy things that we've all done. And we've all been there trying to make that weight and done it wrong. So it's nice to learn how to do it right. But I agree with you. Some of those weight cuts are,
they're just, like, I think they're tough to look at.
Yeah, they're tough to look at. And it's just really interesting to me that as a professional athlete, why are you trying to cut 20 pounds in that last day? Like, you have people that are paid to help you, mm-hmm. you know, like, I think it's, I don't like when people blame like their nutritionist, whatever. Ultimately, you have to step on the scale. You get the honor of, you know, winning those accolades. Yeah. So you need to take the responsibility if you don't make weight, you know, and I really get irritated with people who do it in an unhealthy way and then try to blame their weight cut as a reason for this or that. You know, I think that's kind of a coward's way out.
Yeah, I mean, excuses in general like aren't like – there's always like the Brazilian excuse too, like the way they do it like in fighting. It's like, well, I'm not making any excuses, but you should know my knee is hurt. Mm-hmm. Or you know, some of those like, all right, well, you're kind of making an excuse.
Yeah, and it's like, and that's why I say, you know, when I was injured, yeah, like the knee was – that was there, but that's not why I lost. No, yeah. No.
You lost because you were having like
mental issues. It was my fault. Nobody else lost those matches but me.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking earlier about Dustin, about my coach, Coach Akbari. And it was just like, I feel like he's finally like really, you know, he just won a couple fights in a row and fight to win. And he's like finally really showcasing how good he actually is. But he had this like, I think he had just a little bit of a couple. He was fighting tough guys, to be honest, too. But he just had a few matches where I was like, man, you're not quite competing as good as you actually are.
You know? And he's one of the best. He's one of the best in the world.
You know, and like I think that there's so many matches that were he won and were close, or that he didn't win, where it's just like, man, I know you could beat that guy.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. I almost wish like, just so that people understand how good these athletes are, they should have them compete against like an untrained person. And then put that on camera. It's like, just so you know, this is what it would look like
exactly.
for a black belt to go up against like someone who's never trained before, because it's dramatic, the difference in skill. It's dramatic what they would do to you if they wanted to.
Exactly. Know? And Dustin is so like, he's definitely the one who taught me how to be more fluid and how to be like more relaxed about it and just chill. And, you know, even just have that fun, because you obviously it's going to make it when you're just chilled and relaxed and focused on like when you get out. I feel like when you're competing, it's you have to have a game plan, but that game plan should already be there. You shouldn't be thinking, okay, I need to do this now. You're like, you have that muscle memory because you're going to have that adrenaline. You're going to have like the sounds of the crowd. You're going to have maybe like your favorite purple water bottle is missing, or you know, something happens. So you know, control the things that you can and have fun and just let your body enjoy doing what is, you know, it's a weapon. It's been honed. It's been trained to do something. So just let it do its thing.
Let it go. Right?
And I think Dustin helped me a lot with that. You know, he would be doing these things and he'd be like joking with me and I'm going to do this. And I'm like fighting with all my might and he's just having this good time. I'm like, okay, I want to be that, you know, I want to be able to do that. So it's really cool. Like, for him, you know, to know like maybe there was something going on where he was having a little bit of trouble, but like someone as awesome as him can work through that, then I literally have no excuse. You know, he's willing to spend his time training with me, then I really need to step up.
Hey, so you met the president, you met Obama after you got on that podium.
Yeah, I actually got to meet him twice, so it was pretty cool. Yeah. But again, it's way more cool to shake Brazy's hand when you have a medal on your neck.
Yeah.
And my dog Priscilla actually got to go too, so it was pretty neat. Again, people, you know, you say all these words that are that honor, blah blah blah. I was so excited.
You're just like giddy.
Like a child. And he's a very charismatic person, and you know, we got to, you know, meet Michelle Obama and Joe Biden, and they were just it was so fun. And just, you know, he's I like him because he's kind of goofy. You know, he'll still say funny things, but he really did take his time and make it a point to be there. And it was really, really cool. I mean, winning a medal, like being a part of it, it's so fun. There are all these things that are so incredible. One thing that Coach Scott Moore, he told us when I remember when I first started back in judo, he was actually a teammate. And he told me there's no cooler feeling than walking through opening ceremonies. And I'll never be able to be in the military, so this is the closest I get to honoring my country, to having, you know, Team USA on my back, and, you know, just walking through that crowd. So that was cool. Meeting the president was cool. But I did have to pick a bone with Coach Moore, because there was a cooler feeling than walking through opening ceremonies, and that was standing on the medal stand. So but you know,
that's so cool.
He got to stand a little higher. He was gold. So but it was still I just remember being on that stand and bawling. But just like, you know, the first time I met the president, I was just another athlete. When I got to meet him again, I was an athlete with a medal.
That's so cool. Yeah, I saw that on your profile picture. I was like, oh my god, she met Obama. That's like one of my, like, on my bucket list is to meet Obama. I don't want to meet any president. I want to meet Obama.
Yeah,
actually, Obama and Clinton. You know, Clinton. You know, he's got that picture where he's kind of like crouching down over the railroad tracks, mm-hmm. and he's kind of like in a hip hop stance. You know, he's just Clinton's such a cool guy. So yeah, so I think I'd actually want to meet Clinton over Obama, to be honest. But yeah, that's a bucket list item to meet a president. So good for you.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, I think we're fortunate to be able to do that. You know, they take such good care of us. We get, you know, tons of swag, and I still probably have clothes with tags on them, but
that's funny.
It's sometimes it's just really funny. You wear that outfit and you're like, remember what I was doing the last time I did this? Oh, that's right. I was shaking Brock's hand. That was pretty cool.
That's so cool. Hey, so, we were talking about this earlier and we kind of got sidetracked. So one of the categories is they'll have folks with same gradients of blindness compete against each other. Is that right? And they'll have blind and deaf compete against each other. I'm just interested in how this sort of works.
So, in judo, you're I can compete against a B1 athlete like myself, a B2 or a B3. So all of us can compete against each other.
Got it. So if someone has their like vision but is missing limbs or something like that?
No, they don't have it so far in Paralympic judo. Like, I've trained with people, you know, on who are missing a limb or whatever, but you don't compete.
Got it.
And so it's interesting. So they have a couple of different rule changes. They've actually made some recently, and I apologize that I don't know all the logistics of it yet, but they are making more accommodations because, you know, it says it's a pretty cool honor for me to be the only B1 female judo athlete who medaled in the Paralympic Games in Rio. But it also speaks a lot to, okay, well, we need, like, this is a sport for blind people. Like, we need to do something. So they're making some changes. But they make certain allowances. So we start off with grips in the clinch, I guess you would call it.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that.
Yeah, so for as a B1 athlete, you have to
have some form of contact.
So we have to have 2 points of contact. So, you know, like, which changes things. You know, sometimes when I'm working with my sighted peers, I'll do things that are just like a one-handed throw, and it's fun to do those things, but I can't do those when I'm fighting blind judo rules.
Got it.
And there's apparently some I think there are red lines. I have no clue. There's some lines that if you step out of as a sighted athlete, you know, you get penalized. I do not.
You're considered sighted or not?
I'm considered totally blind.
Right.
So like what indicates that to me? So like if I'm fighting a B2 or a B3, what indicates that I get those allowances is that I have those red dots right. on me.
But like,
or you could just let me walk across the mat and I'd probably trip over like five different things.
But the Sorry. Sighted athlete. Oh, go ahead. She's getting restless.
No, she's just snuggling.
She's just snuggling. Are you good? Do you need to take a break? Are you?
No, I'm fine.
Good. Are you cold at all? I can get cold back here. I can turn the heater on if you want.
I'm still comfortable.
Okay, good. Sometimes my wife complains that it gets cold back here. So you can't see those red lines, but your sighted opponents have to stay within them. So they kind of corrals them so that they have to keep contact with you, and you kind of it gives you that sense of like they're not trying to run. Can they ever break contact with
no.
you totally?
No, if they no. break contact, then they'll stop the match.
They'll restart it.
Or... Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we learn different techniques. Like our coaches like us to try to get the inside grip.
Got it.
So sometimes when they tell us kumikata, which means take a grip, I will try to let them take the grip first and go under, or, you know, you can kind of break it. But sometimes I've kind of learned, you know, the refs are just going to be like, you know what, this is what you got. Some people can still take a left-handed grip, even though I'm going to take a right-handed grip. So you just have to make sure that your arms are the right way. You'll have some people try to like stiff arm you already, but the refs are getting pretty strict about how you're supposed to be. You'll have people try to play games where they'll like let their hand slip up on your lapel, and so you know we're just taught, you know, so you slap that hand down.
Got it. So just grip game, just grip fighting, like in jiu-jitsu as well.
Mm-hmm. So and again, I think, you know, just the points of contact. So also, if you and I think a little bit of it has changed. So I apologize if I'm not completely accurate, but if we accidentally touch the leg in judo, you know, that was like a penalty and you're disqualified.
Yeah.
So we kind of get a warning, and I actually got a warning in Rio. And honestly, I was so worked up that I was like, really, what'd I do? And, you know, they told me that I touched her leg. I was like, oh,
how does that work exactly? Like, I feel like double leg takedowns are valid. Like, I don't know. Like, they're just not okay in judo, or like,
no, you can't, we can't do that anymore. And it takes a lot of like old school traditional judo. So I think that there is just people who are just running in and doing that and not using technique. I don't even know. Again, that's kind of more political stuff. So I just, give me rules and I just follow it. I used to like leg picks when I first started. I won a match by a leg pick. So, but it teaches you.
Can you talk a little bit about the politics of it though? I mean, if you don't mind, or like there's politics in all these sanctioning bodies, definitely. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I know that wrestling just went through some rule changes and people are saying that they're like killing the sport of wrestling. You know, there's some funky thing now with wrestling where they have this like criteria. They kind of like it almost like goes to a judge's decision if it's tied, you know. And it's really...
where they like it isn't like they like throw a towel. There's some weird thing that they do. I've heard
it makes
about this.
No sense at all. Where it's and now the
like your fate is on as much as you fight, then it's like on the fate of a coin toss or something. Some weird thing. I don't remember what it is.
Like if it's a tie, then they just like. They have these two cubes in a bag,
mm-hmm.
and like whichever one gets picked out like wins. It's like that's so lame.
Yeah, that I think that's not cool at all.
Those rule changes in judo that kind of banned the leg picks are political because they sort of like cleaved a part of the old school arts from the competition. Is that a good way to put it?
I would say that, you know, I don't know if they people thought I honestly don't know what their reasoning was. Definitely not trying to avoid the question, just don't really, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe some people thought it wasn't looking dynamic, it was just looking like you're, you know, doing wrestling
like
or whatever,
like a bully or something.
But I mean
it's interesting,
like, if there's ever a time to get, you know, to make things work for you, then I think, you know, being in a martial art is that time. But
yeah, like go for it, right?
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because to me it kind of speaks to the idea that folks have a vision in their head of what the application of the art should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of folks in judo, it means like throws and trips, which I mean, honestly, like when I think about the most beautiful skill in all of grappling, it's trips. I think trips are just like
foot sweeps. Yeah, we call them sweeps. Yeah.
Foot sweeps. God, they're just so pretty.
They're
so dynamic and the timing. And like you have to, for folks listening that might not be familiar with trips, you're kind of like, and you're probably better suited, you correct me if I'm wrong, but you're kind of timing the pressure that the person is putting on each foot so that you want to kind of catch them as they're about to step on their left foot,
right?
And then just sweep it out from under them, right?
Yeah. So when we're doing drilling, you know, like you're going 1 2 3 1 2 3, you're kind of dancing. So maybe you're going to go 1 2, and it's like that 2 1/2 2 1/4 when your foot is kind of in midair. That's why when I want to try to sweep it. So it's really finding that timing. You know, you're going to drag 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 attack,
right?
And
but that's like that one, like
that split second,
that it's like a third of a second, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? It's really hard to time, isn't
and
it?
I that was one of the things I really I get sometimes. The thing I have the most difficulty with is something I'll win a match with, and I've had trouble with foot sweeps for a long time. And I was living in Chicago and was training at this dojo called Tokan, and Doug Tono, he is super awesome at foot sweeps. And it was kind of funny because one of the coaches that I work with out here taught him. But it was really fun to learn from him because he just had a different perspective and it just felt beautiful. I was like, how did you sweep me again? You know, like, how does this keep happening? But it was, again, it was really fun to be able to learn that technique. And it can be like, you know, the kata, like the forms of judo can be really, really beautiful. Sometimes you can be in those matches where, again, you'll in judo one day you're on one side of the coin and the other side day and the other, where you're doing the fluid throw or you're being thrown fluidly. so it makes it really fun. And I don't know what the reasoning for the rule changes were. They always change. I just always try to know what they are. Sometimes they change, you know, different grips. When I do train jiu-jitsu, if I have partners, if we're learning, maybe they're learning like ankle locks and stuff like that, that's my turn to be, you know, the training partner. I'm like, you can just go ahead and do those on me. I don't want to learn them, not because I don't want to know them, but again, it might be part of my muscle memory. So like, and I'll feel it there.
For competition,
yeah.
For
yeah. Them. So it's something that I'm never going to be allowed to do. So I just kind of feel like I don't want to get myself in trouble with like having knowledge isn't always could be damaging, yeah. Sometimes. So
you don't want to walk down a road that you don't want to be on.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's really neat, and it is fun too, because then I get to like learn, you know, get to just feel something that's very different from what, you know, what I know, and like, okay, well, this is okay, but you know, also you need to tap out of this. It's not a safe place for you.
Yeah.
And it can give me an advantage too of like, okay, like they're going for this, but you know, you could, I just think, well, if they can do this, they can also armbar me. So I don't want to be here. And it just really helps you with that. So
you were talking about earlier about the rule set of judo. If you're not making forward progress on the ground, they'll stand you back up.
Yes.
I think that makes sense. You get like what, like maybe like 30 seconds. And if you're not making something happen by then, like, all right, back up.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on the ref. It really depends on, you know, what's happening. I really felt like in Rio, like we were on the ground for, I don't know, it felt like a long time, but I can clearly, our coach Liddy told us before, he's like, everybody who's going to step on these mats wants to win a medal. You got to be willing to fight for every second of the match. Don't let refs make the call. Don't let, you know, you, if you make a mistake, then you have to just keep moving forward, like no matter what happens, you determine what happens in this match. And I like remember like being on the ground, and I was like, I still didn't feel stressed. Like that's the funny thing, is people thought I was like worn out, that this girl was dominating me, and I if it looks like that, then I guess that's what it was. But I know like I didn't feel that way, and I just remember feeling her pause, and our coach told us, you know, you fight until the ref calls stop. And I was like, he didn't call mate. That means stop. And I was like, oh shit, he didn't call mate. And I jumped on this girl, and it was so cool, because I think it was, she was so stunned, because I think she maybe just lost focus for a second. And that split second of focus is the reason I have a bronze medal. So wow. You just have to like really, really be ready for whatever. And, you know, that case, you know, I didn't let her get to standing again, where maybe she would have had that advantage and be able to, you know, drawn out those last few seconds. But I don't know how long we were on the ground. Maybe it was only a few seconds, and she just was like, I just can stand up. And I was like, not today, girl. We're gonna have a pin for a minute, so 20 seconds.
This will be it here. Hey, so I'm hoping I can ask you just a few questions about being blind.
Absolutely.
When we were outside, you were like, oh, I'll just follow you. And I thought that was so remarkable. That's why I thought that you could see, because I was like, oh, you're just going to follow me. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess Susie's
not like a stalker, just by the way. I was going to just follow him to the car.
Mm. No, so Susie's helping you with that.
Huh? Oh, her name's Priscilla.
Priscilla. Sorry, yeah. I don't know why I said Susie.
I don't know.
God.
Your new name.
So Priscilla's helping you with
that. Yeah, so I kind of gave her a command that was like a follow command, so she knew to do that. And then you gave me directions. You said, you know, we're going to go out, and it's to the right. So, you know,
so
that was, you know, you said I'm parked right up front. So I kind of get those visual cues. And you, I mean, people think it's funny. I'll say things like, I'm going to watch This Is Us. And they're like, well, you can't see it.
I kind of wanted to ask you about that, but I didn't want to be insensitive.
You're going to have to work really, really hard to offend me. Like, maybe like...
Like
not offering me chocolate or something one day. That would be rude.
So you were saying earlier, I'll fall asleep watching Netflix.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but if you think about it, like, let's just say that their Game of Thrones was on. Okay. Right. You can look at it and there's a lot of cool visual stuff. But if you completely muted it, wouldn't you miss half of the show as well?
Yeah.
So you're watching it, you're observing it. There's more than one way to kind of, you know, experience the show. And you know, just like as a sighted person, if you completely turned it down, you didn't have closed captioning, you would miss a lot of it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, I mean, I watch it like when, you know, like someone says that sign over there says, you know, 50% off. Actually, the sign is not saying it. The sign reads it. So people just get really technical with like their words. And I can't watch things. I can't, you know, whatever. I'm like,
are you painting like a vision in your mind? Are you like visual? Because you're talking earlier about visualizing as well.
Yeah, I think I do. You know, you kind of get an idea. One thing I'll do, I mean, I'm fortunate to have like a lot of cool friends. So sometimes if I'm watching maybe a show or whatever, and I'll like text them like, hey, are you watching this? What happened with this? Or blah, blah, blah. And they do have on some shows, this it's called audio description. Uh-huh. So it'll kind of give like, you know, say like, you know, this person walked into the room, you know, or this person, you know, like, or they'll read text or whatever. So it's really nice because it kind of gives you a little bit. My family members were always really good at kind of telling me stuff like that, you know, or like I said, I have friends that I'll ask. It's not for every show.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes one of the things I'll do is like I'll read the recap of the show, you know, because they write them up. So, and I'll get some. I'm like, oh, that's what that was, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's different techniques that you use, but I still, you know, definitely get to enjoy it. Sometimes there are things if it's just a completely visual thing, I'm like, good night, you know. I don't really care because there's nothing I can really get out of it. Yeah. And having someone just sit there and tell me every little thing, I'm like, they're not going to get to enjoy it. So. You know, I just don't care about it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Were you born blind?
I was. Like I said, I have pretty much light perception and I can see some shadows, but I'm also very light sensitive. So I just try really not to use my vision because it just bothers me more than anything. But I was really fortunate. I learned, you know, before I had Priscilla, I was very proficient with the cane. I still am, just don't use it as much. So I say when I'm using my cane, that's the stick shift, and then she's the dogmatic. But I, you know, I learned to read Braille when I was about 3 years old, thanks to my mom kind of making me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, I learned all those, you know, like non-visual techniques to do things. And people, like we were talking about, people are so scared of blindness. Like it's this horrible.
Well, people say vision impaired.
Yeah, they say vision impaired, low vision, you know, anything.
You told me in the car. You can
anything
just call
but
me
the
blind.
B word.
Yeah, you were like, you can just call me blind. I can't see shit.
Exactly. We have this joke that we say that we suffer from BAF. you know, there's some times where it is just so frustrating. Like, I'll lose something, and then a sighted person, I'm like, oh, it's right here. I'm like, yeah, thanks for putting it there, dick. But you know, it's I mean, like, I'm not gonna say like everything's always great or whatever. Like, there's, you know, like, there's, I deal with dumb people like all the time. Especially, you know, as a martial arts athlete,
being blind.
Oh, they'll speak super loudly to me because if I guess I don't.
Oh, they think you're deaf or something.
I guess, or
morons.
Or like, let's just say you and I went to a restaurant. They would say, "What does she want?" You know, like that would.
Here.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, I've gone, even been with like my younger niece and nephew, and, you know, when they were little, and they would talk to them rather than talking to me. I'm like, hey, I know I don't act very mature, but I am actually the adult in this situation, so talk to me.
So folks just kind of assuming that you can't fend for yourself, mm-hmm. assuming that you can't pick something for yourself, assuming that you're kind of like robbing you of your agency.
Yeah, definitely.
And kind of like categorizing you as, mm-hmm.
just
a
victim
or something.
Just putting me into that box. And you know, sometimes mm-hmm. like I just
and you're
try
anything
to,
but a victim.
Exactly. I definitely will laugh at people. I mean, we talked about on the mat. I love when people underestimate me. It's great because then I get to potentially prove them wrong or just teach them. You know, like now when we go on when we roll, there's no way I'm going to get the little blind girl.
Yeah.
No, thing no with you. You're going to like, you know what? You're going to choke me just like I'm going to choke you. So. Yeah. But it's nice. I try to think about things as like an educational opportunity. I'm not always super patient. There's people who drive me nuts. I have people who say really ignorant things like, oh, you're too pretty to be blind. I'm like, what?
What the fuck?
Yeah, like, so I don't even, what does that even mean? Or people who like, you know, who
and
just
they're
come
trying
up,
to be nice.
They are, yeah, like, no. They guess this means that as a compliment, but I'm like, okay, let's just not snap on this person or... So sometimes I have fun with people just because you have to have fun with life. So yeah. People will just come up and pet my dog, think it's okay, is definitely not at all. When she's in her harness, it's like grabbing someone's steering wheel when they're driving on the freeway.
Got it.
Since they think it's okay to pet my dog, I just pet them back. People got so mad at me. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you doing? They're like, I was just petting your dog. And I was like, oh. Was that do you feel like this is inappropriate? And they're like, yeah. I was like, well, then so is petting my dog. So I'll just try to do stuff like that.
Hey, a couple of other questions. How do you recognize people? Their voice?
Sometimes like their voice. You know, sometimes people have like, we actually, you know, kind of joke about this in the massage field. Like sometimes you'll have maybe clients, maybe have some of them have like the same name. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm seeing Catherine today, but I have three clients named Catherine, so like when I start working, oh, you're the Catherine with the shoulder issue, you know, so you kind of feel those things. So maybe it's a voice, maybe it's like, you know,
something you can
sense
feel on them.
Or you know, I don't necessarily like pay attention, like I don't count footsteps or pay attention to people's footsteps, but certain people have a gait.
People
maybe
do
they
that?
Yeah,
like blind people.
So supposedly that's one of them. It's not something I do.
Do you like recognize somebody by their gait? That's incredible.
Some people like do. I mean, like, or some people might like have like a certain like shoe that they're wearing. Maybe like their shoe has like a little squeak in it. Like one of my coworkers, I know it's him because his shoe makes this little squeak. So I know that's Kevin walking down the hallway, or you know.
Oh my
or,
god!
So you just learn
that is
just
so
different
cool.
things. But you mean like the thing about it is people have this misnomer that if you're blind, then all my other senses are so much better. And that's definitely
not true.
Not true. I wish it was because it would be helpful. But I just, you know, you have five senses to observe something like this bottle. You can see it. You know, you can taste the water. You can hear me putting it down. You can touch it. Well, I can't see it. So, but I still can obviously know that there's a bottle of water here. So it's just, you know, learning to use the four senses that I have in a more effective way to kind of balance out the fact that I don't have the, you know, use of seeing it.
What do you dream about? Do you see in your dreams?
It's really tricky because I think in some ways that's like the coolest thing about being blind is I like I'm kind of spoiled and I like to have things my way a lot. Thanks, Dad. No, but so I don't know if I truly know what colors are. Like my favorite colors are purple and blue.
Okay.
But I don't really know if that's if I could see them, if I'd really like them. But the coolest thing is, like, I kind of get to imagine it. So sometimes, like, I have dreams where I'm, you know, still blind and I do things. But sometimes I do have dreams, but maybe it's just my imagination. So it's really cool. I mean, I have like all kinds of crazy dreams. I apparently talk in my sleep, so that's always interesting.
I talk in my sleep too. And sometimes my wife will tell me, it's like, did you know you were mumbling something like about a cow? And like, oh, you were taking this cow to the market, but it started talking back to you. And I was like, no, God, I had no idea.
One of my funniest things about talking in sleep, because I just couldn't get off that last 6 ounces of weight, like no matter what I was doing.
And you're cutting?
Yeah. But I went to bed on weight, and I talked to someone, and then someone I didn't like called me right before I went to sleep. So I guess I went to sleep in a kind of crappy mood. And I was rooming with my friend and her husband. And apparently I woke up or was in my sleep talking a bunch of crap. Like I was fighting somebody. I don't know who it was.
Oh, my goodness.
But I woke up and I was like, you guys, I'm so scared. I think I got up and like drank some water or ate all your food. Do you have your snacks? And they're like, yeah, but you were fighting somebody. And I did not eat anybody's snacks, but I apparently did fight somebody. And
oh, wow.
It was very interesting. I don't remember that at all. It was kind of one of those weird dreams that I guess I was more acting out than I was paying attention to the dream. But there are different ones, you know. I remember actually after winning the medal, because I wanted that Brazilian. I wanted to fight her so much. Like that, I felt like, yeah, I mean, it was the bronze medal match, but it was paid attention to just as much or more so than the gold medal game.
Got it.
But it was one of those things I'd visualized, I dreamed about. So I slept with my medal under my pillow. And because I didn't seem real to me, still didn't. So I remember like waking up in an absolute panic when because I thought I just dreamed it. And then I moved, and you know, after winning a judo tournament, every muscle in your body hurts. And I reached up, and it was real. So it was nice that, you know, you dream it, but then the reality is like so much better than any dream that you can possibly have.
That is so cool. That is so cool. So you would say that you have like a really active imagination because you're not sighted, and so you get to imagine things.
Mm-hmm. It gets to be my way. Like you see, you know, this bottle, and that's exactly what it, you know, looks like.
That's what it is to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like I truly don't know what it looks like, but I know what it feels like. I know what it tastes like. You know, and like if I pick it up and put it down, what it's going to sound like, but it's a different way than you're going to experience it, but it gets to be my way. So I think that makes things
kind of
fun.
Do you have trouble knowing when you're asleep and when you're awake because of that?
No. There are some people who have this condition called non-24s where their circadian rhythms are kind of off. So they don't they can't see that it's light. So they their body doesn't know. So they'll just kind of like fall asleep in the middle of nowhere, the middle of everywhere. I love sleep. And again, like I said, I do have a little bit of that light perception. So
you're good.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, so we're at just over an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, that went by quick, huh?
It did.
Any final thoughts? You did some shout outs to your coaches. Anything else?
Just again, like, thank you for having me here. It's fun. You never know the connections you're going to meet. I would encourage anybody, obviously, I get to throw down this gauntlet since I'm blind and a female and all this stuff, and I can get on the mat, travel all over the world. There's no reason that you couldn't show up to a mat and try it out as well.
Boom.
And thank you.
I like it. Grappling for everybody. It's been another episode. Thank you all.